Welcome to the No Neutral Moments podcast. My name is Patrick Payton, and it's my pleasure to discuss, to explore, and maybe even to discover what it means for each one of us to live our lives fully engaged, to challenge each one of us to be fully aware, and completely expecting to engage to the fullest everything we've been designed, called, and gifted to be. So with all this in mind, let's not waste any more time. Let's go ahead and get engaged. Well, good morning, good afternoon, whatever the case might be for you. This is Patrick Payton, host of the No Neutral Moments podcast. And so this is kind of interesting. So you may not know how I come up with the things I'm going to talk about on a weekly basis, but here's how I go about it. I basically pay attention all during the week to what's going on, and I try to find moments that capture my attention and go, okay, that's evidence of no neutral moment. And so literally this morning, I'm driving down the road. I already have something in mind I'm going to record when I got home to my home office today, because Wednesday is recording day, unless some world crisis happens, which seems to be happening more often now than not. And I come home to my home office, and my wife has a friend who is at our house. And you're going to meet that friend today, because I'm just standing there and I'm eating my Chick-fil-A breakfast. And so I said to this friend, hey, you want to do a podcast? And my wife says, now? And I said, well, yeah, because there's no such thing as a neutral moment, right? And so this is a conversation. You're like, well, who is it? And I'll introduce her in just a minute. That has probably been 20 years in the making. Mm. And so we have quite a story and quite a history together. And so I want to introduce you to my friend, and I'm going to let her tell you her bio a little bit, because a good podcast would have the bio already ready, but I don't claim to be that. And so I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about who she is in a flyover way, and then we'll press into some of it. We'll see where the conversation goes. I have appointments coming up. She has appointments coming up. So we'll try to keep this brief but effective for you and encouraging to you. So I want to introduce you to my friend, Brandy Bell, and many of you probably know her, know of her, have seen her. So I'm going to leave it at that. So Brandy, I think we have known each other almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's been 20 years. I got ready to go, wait a minute, you kept saying I was Cindy's friend. Does that mean I'm not your friend?
So well, I was getting around to that.
I'm glad you clarified. Yeah, 20 years, a little bit over 20 years.
So give the flyover of what you do now, and then we'll go back to story.
Okay, so I am a semi-retired interior designer and construction consultant, because I walked away in November of last year knowing that I was kind of getting called in another direction, but I still have some projects I'm finishing. So I'm not completely retired, but then I just published my first book, which is very much kind of a where I've been, what I've done, how I've overcame, and the stories and the lessons behind it, which obviously, you know, you're very much part of. And then I'm working on a few other books. There's actually two in the pipeline that will come out next year. I'm going to talk you into writing a book. And then we just shot some pilots for a TV show, which is a design and hospitality show showcasing the spirit of West Texas and the overcoming nature again. And so I have a little side hustle called Southern Belling Company, and that's how most people know me, because we do a lot of women's encouragement and workshops and conferences and just kind of loving on our community, actively neighboring, because mm-hmm. that's big with my husband. And so, yeah, so that's a little bit of what I'm doing.
What's the title of the book you just wrote?
The title of the book that just got published was Destined for More, A Broken Girl's Journey of Chasing Dreams and Killing Giants.
So we will be able to link to that. Is that available?
It's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon. So I'll have that posted in the email we send out, show notes, so to speak. So let's go back. Let's take the title of the book.
Okay.
And let's go back to the I met Brandy Bell at Abel Junior High. Let's start there.
Yeah, so it's very much a part of my story. The boys and I moved here from the coast of Carolina, which is home, and we got to Texas, and we didn't know anybody. And I was working at Dillard's, just trying to feed the churins, and somebody said, hey, do you have a church home? And I said, no. And she said, you should visit this church called Stonegate. It's been up for 2 or 3 months. They're meeting in a school, and you should go visit. And so I go one Sunday, and there's this you know, kind of cocky pastor, and he tells the men, he says, look, if you expect your wives to submit to a jerk, you're wrong. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm home. And so I started going to Stonegate. And then, six, 8 months later, you baptized me through the In the Army Now sermon.
Wow.
You were dressed in Army fatigue, and there was a Jeep on the stage.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then...
what was life like for you at that season? Tell us a little bit more about what that was like for you.
So, I mean, to be perfectly honest, when I got here, we weren't quite homeless because I had enough money to put us in an efficiency, but we didn't necessarily have a home, and it was me and three kids, and my ex was supposed to come here, and he did not. So we just sort of found ourselves floating, and then a community of West Texans who did not know us rallied around us. And that's a big part of our story. Like, when you come here, when you come to West Texas, regardless of who you are, what color you are, you know, my kids are multiracial, this community wraps itself around you. Like, you are home. I could have gone back to the East Coast.
Yeah.
My family did not know why I was staying here. But God put us here because he had a bigger plan, and West Texas was very much part of that story. And so even though we were floundering, we found home.
Right.
And not just through the church, but through the boys' school, through sports. And so, I mean, that's just kind of a big part of our story.
So talk about the transition from working at Dillard's to, my gosh, my life's meant for more. I'm going to do more. I'm going to pursue more. How does that happen? Take us through a little bit of that story.
So when I left the coast, I come from multiple generations of home builders and designers. If they're drinking, they will tell you they built the first structures in Jamestown, Virginia. Like, we built this country kind of, you know. So I don't know anything else other than construction design. And when I came here, I was done with it. It's just done. And so... I started working at Dillard's. I wasn't 100% sure what I was going to do, and began to realize that I do need to be in construction and design. It's what I love. I just didn't love it with family. So I kind of started getting back into that. And then during that time, as being a single mom and going to church, I learned about this message that I have more notes on than the person who wrote the message.
True.
About becoming all you're designed, called, and gifted to be. And so many of y'all know that's Patrick's thing, but I adopted it also like 15 years ago. And so as I'm working through the single parenting and figuring out what God's calling me to do, I realized that my heart was very much for not just me becoming what I was called, designed, and gifted to be, but having other people take that message. So like women going, okay, hang on, let me take a step back. What am I supposed to be doing? And so that really changed the trajectory. And so it was about 15 years ago that we started the Southern Bell & Company, which is really, you know, my last name's Bell. It's about keeping good company. It's how do you live into other people. And being fearless and going, okay, God, give me something that you want me to do that I will fail if you don't come through. Mm-hmm. And now he just keeps putting opportunities in front of me where if he doesn't do something, I'm gonna fall flat on my face. And so, and in the background, I'm trying to convince other women, like, they're supposed to be doing that too.
What do you see as that which holds women back the most from pursuing who they are?
I mean, we all have giants, okay? You and I talk about that. And so that's why part of the title is Killing Giants. I think the first one, the biggest, is fear. But then it can be fear of what? Fear of failure. That's a big one for me. I'm a perfectionist. I'm an 8, sort of 3 on the Enneagram. Like, you know, I don't want to fail. So I think the fear of failure holds people back. Comparison. Holy freaking crud.
You did very good right there. People don't know Brandy the way I do. And I was watching your face and I was thinking, are we going to have to edit this podcast?
No, you will not. I'm really good with a microphone in front of me. I never say cuss words. We compare ourselves. It doesn't take long for the enemy to go, oh my gosh, you did really good. Wait, you just published a book. But so-and-so has 2 books. wow, you have a great Instagram following, but wait, she has 300,000 followers. Wow, you just lost 20 pounds. You're feeling good about yourself. You just bought the new leather Spanx, but look at her. She's a size 4. So I feel like that steals for women. Fear, comparison. Oh man, I could go on and on. Your background, like that's a huge giant. Where you came from, you know, looking back. So that was one of the reasons why I wrote the book was, I like to think the beginning of the book is some giants I had to overcome, and then the end of the book is like more some celebrations. But I mean, I watched my mama jump out of moving vehicles for most of my early life. You know, I had a very crazy sense of work because my father worked all the time to be successful, to hide from the fact that my mom was, you know, a little, she struggled. So that, your home life, those lies that you hear, like you're not good enough. Because let me remind you of where you came from.
And there's plenty of people who want to remind you of that.
Oh, yeah. In your family, and your friends.
And in the church.
In the church.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Go back to, I think I remember you in my office. And the discussion was, okay, I have these three boys. I'm a single mom. And I think I distinctly remember telling you the message from my mother, which when you were like, should I date? Should I marry? All this kind of stuff. And I said, well, I can't really speak to that, but my mom says, you should probably just wait until you raise your boys.
Yeah.
And there aren't too many people who have really taken that. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I remember that conversation. We actually had a few conversations. There was a couple that we fought in, but...
Did you say fault?
Fault. Shut up. That specific one was, I've been single for a long time and I was very angry with men and bitter and really didn't even like men. And I think I was wondering sort of something's wrong with me and like, should I be dating? Am I supposed to marry again? Like, what does that even look like? And you just kind of shared the way your mom's advice. And it almost took the pressure off of me. Mm. Frankly, it was just like, okay, I don't have to do that. And you're lonely. You know, we got the Single Moms Conference coming up in 2 weeks at Stonegate, by the way. So if you're a single mama, please go to their website. So I always say the cool thing about single parenting is if you screw up, it's all your fault. Okay? But if you succeed, you have the opportunity to raise Superman. And so it's a lonely place when you don't have anybody to walk with you, but it's an empowering place when you get to make the decisions. And so I think during that time it was like, okay, cool. All right, I can do this, but then you're lonely. But then Kyle came along.
Yeah. I was going to say, let's transition into the Kyle and talk a little bit about, your boys on this journey. Kyle steps into your life, the patience of Kyle, and then just how that whole thing came, because you and Kyle have been married how long now?
So we just had our 6th anniversary, but we dated 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, just take us through a little bit of that story, because I even love watching, from my perspective, how your boys responded to what you were trying to do. It was almost like, it's us four, no more. We're going to fight this battle. Kyle steps in as this, he's the proverbial Yoda of people's lives, and... You know, it almost got to this point where I think the boys were like, Mom, I think
please,
it's time. So
Lord.
Tell a little bit about this.
Yeah. So I was very, can I say hell?
Sure.
Okay.
You did. So.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I did. So I was very hell bent on keeping Kyle away from the boys because I did not want, you know, lots of women date, and then you have these uncles, and then it's weird, and then maybe kids get attached. So one of my things was there was never a man going to come into my house. Like, no. If my boys want to wake up in the middle of the night, and they've had a nightmare, and come get in my bed, then that needs to be empty. And so so I held him very much at a distance. And I think for the first 9 months we, quote-unquote, dated, Cindy Russo used to make fun of me because I wouldn't call him my boyfriend. I called him my man friend. And he could only come up to church, but when the boys were coming out of Sunday school, he had to leave. And one day he was like, I'm obviously not going anywhere. Could I just meet him so I don't have to run the other direction? And so that kind of tells you how Kyle is. So then we just very slowly over the years progressed, but he was just always there in some ways. But he never pushed. And the the best part, if I could give girls any advice, women who want to date, find a man who is more protective of your home than you are. Because he was not going to invade that space. He was not going to push his way in. He was going to protect it for us. He knew that that little single mom home was the only thing my boys had.
It was a refuge.
It was our refuge.
He knew he was not a part of the refuge yet, but he could be a protector of your refuge.
Yeah, he did pretty early on. And so, and that doesn't mean he wasn't involved because, I mean, I think you and Kyle are the ones that helped Alex decide what school to go to. There were times when he really knew when to step in and then times he knew when to back off. And so he just kind of patiently waited. But, and it was like, when all the boys graduate high school, that's when we'll get married, right? That's why we dated so long. We did get accused of, I had some people at church that I trusted who said, well, we hear you're living in sin. And instead of defending it, because we were not, I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to fight that battle. I'm just going to step back. And so we took some hits choosing to date that long. We really did. And it wasn't always easy because there were times when I wanted to be married, but I just wanted a safe place for the boys. But at some point, I think Alan was a junior in high school, and I'm a helicopter mom.
Wait. Tell everybody, if you can, the names of your boys and their ages. Because you just said Alan, and everybody's like, well, who's the rest?
Oh, yes. Okay, so Andy is now 27. He's the oldest. He has our granddaughter, Marley. Alex is 25. He's in Nacogdoches. He doesn't have any kids. Alan is getting ready to turn 21, so he was the youngest. So when the youngest was a junior, basically, they were like, Mom, please get married. It was more like, leave us alone, have somebody else to put your attention on. But I don't know if you remember this, but when Alan was a freshman and we were doing youth and you had asked a question, it was like the first or second night, you had asked a question about, it was about step parenting or something like that. And you had asked Alan specifically something, and his response was, well, I don't ever remember my life without Kyle. And so that was almost the permission to go, okay, it's time to get married.
Yeah.
And then, frankly, once we got married, we had been together so long, it just, you know, what it allowed us to do is start living into lives of people as a couple versus Kyle and Brandy. Now it's Kyle and Brandy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But don't you think it's interesting, though? I had this conversation with someone this morning.
Okay.
And maybe this is a part of this conversation. It was just a, hey, how are you doing? How's life? We weren't even on air yet on this radio program I was on. And he asked me about my kids. And then I asked about his kids. And all of us have grown kids. And then he makes the comment. He says, isn't it interesting the phases your kids go through and you get to experience the phases of their life? And I said, but isn't it interesting how the shortest phase is when you raise them until they're adults? And then the greater part is after that. And you've heard people say, you know, be their friend after you're their parent,
so
to speak. I look at what you've done, and we sit here and say we've known each other for well over 15 years, close to 20.
Yeah.
And some people would listen to your story and go, Brandy, you waited that long? But then you look back and you go, that is actually a short thing because the reality is now we're going to do this greater life together. And I don't know even how to put that into words other than just the commending of you realizing the more important thing is, I think, this clarity of you're a whole person with or without Kyle.
Yeah.
But what you needed was a whole person, and that whole person respected your personhood, respected the personhood of your boys and this journey. And that's going to pay massive dividends, more than some lady who says, I've got to have a man in my life.
Yeah.
This guy seems to be concerned about me. And then how many times have we seen that turn into just a train wreck?
Yeah. And that's something that is so hard to talk about because I don't ever want to sound preachy like I know it all, because I don't. But I want women to wait.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to wait for the right one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want them to jump into things because they're lonely or their heart hurts or they think they can't pay the bills. Because, hello, been there many times. If they could just figure out how to feed themselves in some ways, which is through mentorships, reaching out to people. I mean, don't get me started on books because you and I are both bookaholics, but even that, even kind of deciding, okay, I want to make myself the best possible version of me. So when God decides to bring that person along, when I'm not looking, by the way,
exactly,
I'm going to be at a point where it's not two broken people. It's as whole as we know how to be. Mm-hmm. Not perfect, because, oh, Lord knows, Kyle and I have had our issues, but we are doing the best we can with what we have, with where we're at, with what we know. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that means we're actively trying to make ourselves better. He does it to this day. I do it to this day. I didn't stop trying to be a, you know, the best version of myself because, well, now I landed the man,
right?
And he's pretty precious and cute. I still want to be the best version of myself. And so, I think that's, so I used to joke with my older sister, and she's with Jesus now. So, I used to tell her she was just a hot mess, but she would be looking for men. And I'd say, if you were going to write a want ad, what would you put? Would you put sort of homeless girl, no job, wears weird clothing, you know, whatever, on multiple medications? Would that be like your want ad? What kind of men is that going to attract? So why don't you just pause there, spend a few years kind of working some of those things out, and then write your new want ad. Like, be the best you can be before you get in relationships. And I think we think men can fix us because mm-hmm. we have those wounds. We all have wounds we're trying to fill. Women try to fill them with men. Like, that's almost our go-to, unless we become bitter. But
I think that's so cool what you just said. I've never heard that. Write your want ad. Because that applies to dudes as well. Like, okay, dude, write your want ad and then tell me which woman is going to want to purchase that mess.
Yeah.
You know, it's
not even fair.
It's not, you're not purchasing, you're not flipping houses, flipping spouses or whatever it might be. we're not looking for the house that has good bones. We're looking for the house that is perfect.
Oh my gosh, that's
that
so
we
good.
Want to buy. You mentioned books, you mentioned mentors. Are most of your mentors people you've walked with in the flesh, or are most of your mentors those who you have listened to and read? I say that because I spoke last night at an event.
That's such a good question.
And that's what I told them. I said, one of my greatest mentors I only knew for 3 weeks, and one of my second greatest mentors I've only met in person once.
Yeah.
And so talk about that.
Man. Okay, first of all, kudos to you because I love good interview questions. I think that says a lot about the character of the person. So good question. I would say 30-70. 30% I actually know, 70% I've probably never met. So there's a book called Steal Like an Artist, and it talks about how whatever type of industry you want to be in, you need to look to the people that you want to be like, and you pick and choose little parts so that you can put it all together. And you, even if the people are dead, you can learn from them. You can mentor under people who are not living.
It's probably better to mentor under dead people because there's no more life they have to disappoint you.
Oh, wow, that's profound.
So if you think about, you go to Barnes & Noble, which we used to do, but you don't anymore, but and I'd look under biographies. I would never read a biography. Oh, I take that back. I read one of someone who's alive, and it was President George W. Bush.
I read that one.
But the rest, I just go, you know, honestly, you're going to get disappointed. Their story is not finished yet. And so you're probably better off to read the stories of old dead people.
Yeah.
Because it's been tried, refined, and true. So anyways, some of your best mentors.
Alive or dead?
Either.
Okay. So I love John Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I've only met him twice, but even the way I wrote my book, I made it clear it was not a Christian book. The next books are not quote unquote Christian books. So I tell my story, and on the last chapter, I say, okay, I'm going to share my faith with you now, but I'm going to pull a John Maxwell moment because at his events, when he's done teaching business, when he's done teaching leadership, he goes, hey, all right, now we're going to call a bathroom break.
That's right.
And all of y'all that don't feel comfortable listening to my faith, you get to go.
Right.
And so I did, I mean, from the moment I heard that, this was 5 years ago, I told Kyle, I was like, if I ever write a book, I'm going to do that. And so that's why I did in my book. So in some ways, like he led to that. Mm-hmm. Oh gosh, I have so many. I mean, there's
some crazy ones.
The Dalai Lama is very much a mentor of mine, and mm-hmm. I'm a Christ follower.
Right.
You know? So anyway.
Well, let's debunk something you just said.
Okay.
the difference between a Christian book.
I know you're going to do this.
Yeah, and a non-Christian book. I despise the characterization of certain things as Christian.
I know.
Christian music.
Yeah.
Christian books. Christian art. I think has cheapened real art that glorifies the creator.
Okay, so that's why I wrote my books that way, because you gave me that lecture 10 years ago. And so I wanted it to be a book where anyone can read it, right. But it's a woman who hopefully is after the heart of God. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's my hope. I love Jesus. I'm writing a really good dang book. Mm-hmm. You're going to laugh and you're going to cry. And then at the end, you're going to go, oh, okay. She loves the Lord, but it's not me telling you I love the Lord.
Right.
So when I first started social media, however many years ago, and I asked you, I said, do I have to put a Christian fish or I love, I love Jesus and fried chicken and lip gloss.
Right.
And you're like, no, you do not have to do that. Right. I don't want to have to tell people I love Christ. Now, I want to share my testimony.
Sure.
Which is the last chapter.
That's just your story.
Yes. But I want to have a great TV show. So like when we first did the pilots, we could have got picked up by a Christian television network. Mm-hmm. I said, no, I don't want it on that.
Yeah.
I just want a really great show produced by Christians on regular TV so that people are like, hey, there's something different about that.
Well, and what is it that Jesus says? Do your works in such a way that they may see those works and glorify your Father who is in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
This is the same Bible that in Romans chapter 1 says, people see God in the creation. And so the question for, God, I hope you're presenting to people and they're hearing on this podcast, is to say to artists, to writers, to business people, to insurance salespeople, is stop trying to do Christian things, do things in such a way that they exhibit the Christ
Absolutely.
That's in your life.
Absolutely.
And that's this disconnect we've had for so long.
Yeah.
You know, it's why I was at a U2 concert several years ago and they started singing the song, Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. I get goosebumps talking about it. And my oldest son is with me. And all of a sudden, people start raising their hands and waving them back and forth, like a church service. And I leaned over to my son and I said, this is called worship because it's pulling at the hearts of people. And so just to hear your story about how you design a house, how you redesign a house, how you design a life, how you paint a room, people should walk in and by the quality of our work, see something greater than us, rather than us having to label it.
Hi.
By the way, this is Christian.
I'm a Christian writer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all the songs are going to sound the same and all the pictures are going to look the same.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, that's why nobody buys that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, no, I mean, that's it. And I think like if you and I were having the conversation, I wouldn't feel the need to say that to you, but to the outside world, especially. So unless you know me personally, you're not going to go to my website or my social media and go, oh my gosh, she's married to a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're probably going to see me with the occasional glass of wine in my hand. And if you're with me for long, you're going to hear a curse word come from my lips. I don't want to have to tell people that I'm married to a pastor and that makes me holy. Or I love Jesus and that's what makes me holy. I don't want to have to do that. I want people to go, okay, she is freaking crazy. But
well, they
wait,
say that. That's clarified.
They do say, shut up. But then there's maybe something about her that I want to know what's different. Like, mm-hmm. why does she have a peace during all of this craziness?
Right.
What's different about her? So I don't know. I feel like sometimes I have to, when people find out I'm married to a pastor or I am a Christ follower or an apprentice of Jesus, which is my new term that I just love, I feel like I have to say, yeah, but this isn't a Christian book.
Right.
Because you know why? Because then they're going to think it's cheesy.
Right.
Or this is not a Christian television show because then they're going to be like, oh, well, it's going to be cheesy. So there's a defense mechanism in me that wants to go, this isn't Christian.
Right.
But it is written by a Christ follower, which makes it Christian,
right.
you know? So it's just hard. It's a weird line.
Well, it is a weird line. Let me go all the way back to maybe a mentor or a book, maybe books that have made the difference for you. So, you know, for me, Experiencing God or Desiring God by John Piper was a game changer for me. John Maxwell's, any of John Maxwell's books, although, you know, most of his books and, you know, it's sort of repetitious. Mm-hmm. If you can start reading them pretty fast.
Yes.
In many regards. And then obviously the transformative book of my life outside of the Bible was Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So,
yeah.
What are the books that are your go-tos? Like if I said, what's the one you've given away the most or you recommend the most?
So I have three.
Okay.
So for people who are just trying to get their crap straight, and I warn them, it is horrible. It is hard. You have to have kahunas to like make your way through it, which is Seven Habits, mm-hmm. because you've challenged me on that. But to the point where I had to get the workbook and a whiteboard yeah. and deciding I'm not going to read it in a month. I'm going to spend a year. And so that's what I've done this year. Game changer, because let me tell you, I am not an empathic listener. Like I am thinking, I'm on my feet. So really that's been a huge, and I've read it five times,
yeah.
but this year has been different because I'm like, okay, what do I really struggle with? It's not really relationships, it's listening. Mm. And so I want to be a better listener. So I'm working on that. So anyone who has got the drive, that's a book. But it's not for the weak at heart. And no. I'm not like going, hey, look at me, I'm so tough, I read it. It's taken me five times.
Well, it's so funny. I was in my speech last night. This is so funny the way this conversation is working out. Because I told people I had gotten a phone call from a young man who asked me if I'd mentor him. And I said, here's the rule. You go buy the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. You work the book, and it's going to take you time. You come back and show me your work,
yeah.
and I'll invest in you. Do you know how many, in 20 years, young men have come back to me for the second appointment?
Any?
Guess.
30. 4.
Zero.
Zero.
Oh. Zero. Now, they may later on say they did it, but you're right. It's not for the faint of heart. Mm-hmm. You've got to dig in. So anyways, second book.
So an easy one that I recommend to people who are just trying to figure out their why is Chasing Lions by mm-hmm. Mark Batterson.
That's kind of old book.
It's an easy read, though.
Yeah.
And it goes, hey, what is that huge thing that you almost don't want to tell people? Because you're nervous, mm-hmm. like you're too embarrassed because it's that crazy. What is it? Because it's probably something God put on your heart.
Right.
And he just kind of takes you through the steps of, you got to be crazy.
Yeah.
Like you have to be crazy. So that's one. Really, I mean, again, anything by John Maxwell. I do love the Dalai Lama. Like I said, there's a really good book called The Book of Joy. And it's with Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama. I give it out all the time.
Do you know every time you say the Dalai Lama, do you know the only thing that comes into my mind?
Oh, the movie. Oh, gosh.
Caddyshack. When he says I was with the Dalai Lama. I cannot shake that. Every time you say it.
Every time I say it, you're hearing Dalai Lama.
The Dalai Lama.
The Dalai Lama. That's a good one. So for women, perfect. Grace Over Perfection is a really good one that I've given out a lot. Okay. And this one you don't love as much as I do, but I still love the basic outline of how to win friends and influence people.
I've never said I don't like that.
Oh, did you not?
No, I don't say I don't like that.
I feel like we kind of sparred on that one a little bit at some point. Yeah. But yes, I like that one very much.
Because good principles are good principles
forever.
Are good principles.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a good principle that's a bad principle because a Christian didn't write it.
Yeah.
That's why you can read something from the Dalai Lama and the Dalai Lama. And,
the Dalai Lama.
And since you know your core beliefs,
yeah,
you're fine. Listen, we've been 30 minutes into this thing. Last question.
Okay.
What's the theme of your life?
You just can't let stuff hold you back.
Mm. Okay.
That's it.
Next one. What's the big dream?
Oh my gosh. I have so many. The biggest one, I don't know if it's very clear or focused, which I tell people you don't have to have a perfectly clear or focused dream. Sometimes it just has to be a goal. I want to find a way to have a large enough platform that I can tell women that they are just created for so much more. And I want to be able to have a way to go, this is how you become what you're designed, called, and gifted to be.
That's
my big, big dream. So having the TV show is great. Books are great. I love speaking. Like, I love all those little things. But what is the big platform where I can get the ear of a lot of women and go, oh, sister, mm-hmm. oh, my gosh, there's something so big waiting for you. You are worthy. If no one has told you yet you are worthy, let's figure out how to make that happen. Like, so that's the big dream. I don't necessarily know what God's doing. So I'm just walking to whatever the next right thing is. And right now it's a TV show and some books and my friend Patrick Payton.
Where do people find you?
Social media at SoBell & Co is shortened for Southern Bell and Company. My website is also SoBell & Co. Facebook. I do stuff with the news,
okay.
You know,
whatever. We'll put all that stuff in our email that goes out in our show notes. And, We could go on and on.
I know. This is fun. I miss you. I'm glad we got to do this.
Yeah, I'm glad you just showed up in my life.
As a designer for his wife, because I'm her friend.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, well, folks, I appreciate you tuning in. You've had the awesome opportunity to meet my good friend, Brandy Bell. And God bless. And remember, there's no such thing as a neutral moment. We'll talk to you next time.